talked a lot of Kansas City Royals in the first hour of our program. Want to change gears for a minute and talk some Kansas City Chiefs while we have a chance. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside our producer for tonight's program, Jackson Ogden. Chiefs training camp is in full swing, and the news coming out is as expected. There's some good, there's some bad. Well, let's first discuss the bad, because we've got some injury issues building. And while none of them are overly serious and shouldn't affect anybody's ability to begin the season with the Kansas City Chiefs, the wide receiver core for Kansas City is a little bit beat up right now. Firstly, you've got Sky Moore dealing with a hamstring injury. He did not practice today for the Kansas City Chiefs. I have said for quite some time, and will continue to say, this injury certainly doesn't help his case. I'm not sure Sky Moore is with the Kansas City Chiefs when our season begins here in just a few short weeks.
I really hope not. I just don't see a spot for him on this roster. I'm really hoping this is the final straw.
Yeah, not with, I mean, you've got Hollywood and Rashee and Xavier Worthy at the top of this marquee, right? You drafted Jalen Royals out of Utah State, who I think is going to be a very, very nice fit for this Chiefs team. You brought Juju Smith-Schuster back. You know, I've seen a lot of news surrounding Tyquan Thornton in the last couple of days, right? A former first round pick that the Chiefs certainly see something in. I mean, the guy was a first round pick for a reason. I just don't think that there is room in this wide receiver room for Sky Moore at this point. And a hamstring injury after the injuries that he was dealing with last year certainly isn't helping his case. Hollywood Brown also missed practice today. He is dealing with an ankle injury that he suffered yesterday. Doesn't sound like it's going to be overly serious. You know, that more of a precautionary thing, according to Andy Reid, that shouldn't keep him out of any sort of playing time. Also today, though, second-year wide receiver Xavier Worthy has now been put into concussion protocol. He had a hit to the head yesterday while trying to make a catch out at Mo West and is now in protocol, so he will be out for the next few days. They have tomorrow off. They will then have practice Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It'll be a day off on Monday as well. And then, of course, you've got other injuries that are popping up. Juwan Taylor has sort of been in and out because of a knee injury. But again, this team still has a little bit of time, right? That first preseason game is August 9th in Chicago against the Bears. So you've got, you know, over a week until the preseason starts. Then you got to think about 3 weeks of preseason games before you even get to the regular season. Obviously, still plenty of time to get yourself healthy and ready to go before the season begins. The Chiefs did make a move today. Not going to read into it at all, but they did pick up Kwame Lassiter. If you are familiar with the name,
I am.
It's because he is a former Kansas Jayhawk. He has been in the UFL for the last little while, at least. I'm assuming he's just a training camp body for the time being, right? When you're down three receivers, it's just more guys that Mahomes can throw the ball to. He was with the Memphis Showboats last year during the 2024 season. He had 24 catches for 271 yards and one touchdown in 8 games. He started 7 of those. We'll see what happens. He was an undrafted free agent back in 2022. He spent 2 years with the Bengals practice squad. He only had 13 offensive snaps across 2 games with Cincinnati, and he had 1 catch for 2 yards. It's just a guy to bring in. I think you just needed an extra body in the receiver room while those 3 guys get healthy. And then once you get into the preseason and cuts start being made, I would assume he's probably one of the first names you mention on those lists, barring him having like a Victor Cruz level preseason, which I don't see happening.
Yeah, probably not going to make the roster, but at least he'll get an opportunity to get to be a part of a training camp, maybe play some preseason football, show maybe if a team needs a receiver on their practice squad.
Yeah, somebody else out there that could be maybe is a little light in terms of their receiver depth, they could take a chance. So that brings us to the bigger news out of Chiefs training camp, I guess you could say. And I'm sure it's obviously it has been widely talked about over the course of the last week since preseason began. With Josh Simmons, you know, starts out at left tackle as training camp gets underway, and Jalen Moore is at right tackle because of the injury to Juwan Taylor. Now, Juwan has practiced at some point in training camp, and the battle was then at right tackle, not left tackle. Jalen didn't kick back to left tackle and was splitting snaps with Josh Simmons. No, he was splitting snaps with Juwan Taylor, which is fascinating. I don't know if it's a best-case scenario, worst-case scenario. Monetarily, it's an awkward one because you've got a battle now at right tackle between a guy that you're going to pay like $12 million a year in Jalen Moore against a guy you're paying $20 million a year to in Juwan Taylor. A $30 million position battle is not exactly ideal if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, but the circumstances, I believe, behind why they're having that position battle does benefit the Kansas City Chiefs greatly, because what it's telling us is that they have a ton of belief in Josh Simmons. He is extremely healthy right now, which I think is a very welcome sign. He has practiced incredibly well, and I think the part of this that has allowed me to buy in more so than anything, because I'm bought into Josh Simmons, right? I was already buying in, but now I'm completely immersed. It's because of the people you're hearing these things from, right? It's one thing for us, you know, us as media members in Kansas City to say, oh, he looks great, right? To read an ESPN article from Nate Taylor and he's talking about how great Josh Simmons has looked, or to hear Cody and Gold talk about it on the midday show about how great Josh Simmons has been. Because we all have, whether, you know, purposefully or not, rose-colored glasses a little bit when it comes to covering the Kansas City Chiefs, because we live in Kansas City. It's the team we've covered for a long time. Some of us have grown up in this area and have rooted for this team our entire lives. We're always going to see something that others that aren't Chiefs fans may not see, right? That bias exists within us, whether we like it or not.
I like to call it the Justin Ross effect.
Yes. Yeah, there's always going to be that, right? Justin Ross or oh my goodness, Jody Fortson was another. Like, there's always those guys that people are like, oh, this, you know, hey, he's going to be a dude. And then he doesn't. And everybody's like, well, why wasn't he a dude? Well, because we saw what we wanted to see and ignored what we didn't. What has gotten me excited is that it's not just those of us here in Kansas City. It's not just those of us who cover the team or are Chiefs fans that are saying these things, right? Ian Rappaport from NFL Network was in Kansas City earlier this week, and him and his crew and the guys he was with from NFL Network were duly impressed with Josh Simmons. You know, Mitchell Schwartz, and he's another guy who maybe falls under that category of being a little bit Chiefs-centric, obviously had the best years of his career in Kansas City. He was an all-pro, a pro bowler. He's a Chiefs fan. He's a Chiefs guy. He has been very, very complimentary of Josh Simmons. Jeff Allen, another guy, you know, again, another Chiefs guy, but he has been very, very vocal about how he feels about Josh Simmons, that he could be a Pro Bowl, all-pro kind of guy. I've also seen media members from other NFL teams who have watched clips of Josh Simmons at training camp. And I mean, I've already seen the tweets. It's phenomenal to me. I've already seen them. It's the same tweets that I saw when the Chiefs drafted Trent McDuffie. It's the same tweets I saw when the Chiefs drafted Xavier Worthy, and when they drafted Rashee Rice, and when they drafted Creed Humphrey. And the tweets of, oh my God, how did the NFL let the Chiefs get this guy? How did every other NFL team not do enough due diligence and allow a talent like this to fall to the Kansas City Chiefs? Those tweets are already surfacing, and we haven't even gotten to the preseason yet. Maybe I'm putting the cart before the horse a little bit, but I am in on Josh Simmons. I think from what I've seen, from what I've read, and again, not just from people in Kansas City or around Kansas City, people who are Chiefs fans or are paid to cover the Kansas City Chiefs, these are national media members who have no allegiance to the Kansas City Chiefs organization whatsoever, who are being very vocal publicly about how impressed they are with Josh Simmons, and other fan bases who are voicing this their displeasure at the other 31 fan bases in this league allowing Josh Simmons to land as the left tackle for Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid in Kansas City.
Well, think about the tackles that got taken before him in the first round. There was Will Campbell at 4, Amar Mbeu at 7 to the Jets, Kevin Banks Jr., to the Saints at 9. Josh Connerly went to the Commanders a couple picks before the Chiefs, and then of course the Chiefs take Josh Simmons. How many of those guys go in front of Josh Simmons if the knee injury doesn't happen last year at Ohio State? Maybe Will Campbell. But that's probably it. Josh Simmons is probably a top 10 pick. He probably goes where Mbeu went if he stays healthy. So the Chiefs are one of those teams that has the luxury to take a swing on a guy who's had bad injury history versus a team that really needs to get that pick right. Like the Jets, they would rather take a safe, quote unquote, safer pick with Mbeu who's been healthy. But yeah, you're looking at it and you didn't hear anybody last year at camp say, man, Kingsley Suamataya is holding it down at tackle. Right. Wanya Morris is holding it down at tackle. You're seeing clips come out of Josh Simmons against some of our premier pass rushers, and he's just making them go away. I mean, this will be the first time since Eric Fisher, and I don't want to say too many negative things about Orlando Brown or Donovan Smith. They weren't horrible, but this will be the first time since Eric Fisher you feel comfortable having your left tackle on an island.
Yeah, no question. And people weren't always the most comfortable with Eric Fisher at left tackle. I mean, the amount of people, and including myself at certain times, that were very, very disappointed in Eric Fisher's play for a long time. And now you look back on it 5-6 years later and you're like, during the course of last season,
I'd do anything to have an Eric Fisher.
I would have paid $10 million to have that version of Eric Fisher
play
again.
As well as Eric Fisher last year for the Chiefs at left tackle.
No question. And if this continues, all right, if this hits the way that people are saying it'll hit, people that are inside the NFL circles, people who cover the NFL for a living nationwide, if this thing hits the way that they're talking about and Josh Simmons is as good as they're advertising, we won't have to worry about Patrick Mahomes' blind side possibly ever again. Which is so exciting.
I mean, you look at it, Tom Brady had the same left tackle from his first year playing in the NFL in 2000, that's the first Super Bowl he went to in 2001, up to 2011. That entire time, he had one left tackle. Mahomes has had 5 different left tackles start in the Super Bowl for him so far. Brady had one in his first 5 Super Bowls he went to. So, like you're saying, if Simmons is that dude, you don't have to worry about Mahomes' blindside. Probably the rest of Mahomes' career.
Jackson, that is a wild stat that you just dropped.
Yeah.
Why did that never occur to me? Like, I'm thinking about it in my head right now, and you're right. Mahomes has had a different starting left tackle in every Super Bowl he's played in. That's insane.
It went Fisher, Remmers, Orlando Brown, Donovan Smith, and then this past year, was it Tooney?
Tooney, yeah.
Yeah, and granted, the year that it was Remmers, Fisher tore his Achilles in that AFC title game, so it probably, you know, would have been Fisher barring the injury, but the point stands.
That was the Bucks Super Bowl, correct?
Correct. And that was, gosh, I mean, Mahomes was running for his life.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, 5 different starting left tackles and 5 Super Bowls. That is wild.
That's insane to me. And, I mean, if Josh Simmons works, he's a first-round pick, so he's on a 4-year deal with a 5th-year player option. And if he becomes the Chiefs starter and he stays their starter, he'll be the longest tenured starter at left tackle in Mahomes' career in year 3 or 4. I think Eric Fisher was the starting left tackle for what, the first 2 years of Mahomes' career as a starter?
First three years
as a starter.
First year, we lost the AFC title game. Second year, we won the Super Bowl. Third year was where he tore his Achilles. Okay. So the first three.
So, I mean, that's crazy to me that that's the longest tenured left tackle he's had was 3 years of Eric Fisher. If Josh Simmons can be a constant at left tackle, with you already having now locked up Creed Humphrey long-term, Trey Smith long-term, you've still got a few more years of Kingsley Suamataia. If right tackle is your biggest problem and you've got two guys in Juwan Taylor and Jalen Moore who can battle that out, yeah, they're both being paid a lot of money, but that's not a terrible problem to have. And Juwan Taylor is not going to be a member of this Kansas City Chiefs team during the 26-27 season. They will cut him to get rid of that $20 million that he's scheduled 100%. To get paid next year. They just couldn't do it this year because they would incur a heavy cap hit and have to pay him a ton of money.
I think there is a very strong possibility Jalen Moore is your starting right tackle week one next 100%. Year. If not this year.
100%.
Next year for sure, in my opinion.
913-586-7965 is our number. We'll talk more Chiefs, more Royals as we go along here, but I want to discuss Gilbert Arenas getting arrested. This story is so bizarre, and I want to break it down. You're listening to After Hours, Logan Weber alongside Jackson Ogden here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks, Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views, on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Talking Kansas City Chiefs training camp. Here on 96.5 The Fan, it's After Hours. Logan Weber here hosting tonight's program alongside producer Jackson Ogden. Hanging around till 9 o'clock tonight. We talked about the injuries to the wide receiver room. Xavier Worthy's now in concussion protocol. Hollywood Brown missed practice today with an ankle injury. Sky Moore out with a hamstring. Where does this team, what does it look like right now? Where does it go? With Josh Simmons now seemingly holding down the left tackle position and the position battle shifting now to right tackle between Jalen Moore and Juwan Taylor, it's causing a lot of questions to be thrown around. I got an 816 here in the text line, and our number again, 913-586-7965, if you'd like to text in and get involved in our program here tonight. I got an 816 says the Chiefs could even trade Juwan Taylor. In my opinion, after week six, we should know as much. If he stays, it's an expensive insurance for an injury replacement. Yeah, I mean, theoretically, on the surface, you could trade Juwan Taylor. The problem is Juwan Taylor's being paid $20 million a year. If the Chiefs could trade Juwan Taylor, if they have enough faith in Josh Simmons and Jalen Moore, they would. Because you've got Wanya Morris there as your theoretical swing tackle if you need it. The problem is there another team in the of the other 31 remaining teams in the National Football League, is there a single one that would be willing to pay the money and the possible trade value or draft pick for Juwan Taylor?
No.
No.
Absolutely not.
I think the Chiefs, if it all works out and Josh Simmons is that guy and Jalen Moore is good at right tackle, which I think he could be, the Chiefs would probably take a seventh-round pick for Juwan Taylor.
If they ate the money, for sure.
Right, exactly. The problem is, I don't think there's a team in the NFL that's going to eat the money. That's, I think, where the Chiefs are at right now. Juwan Taylor's on your roster. That's just kind of the way it is. And then when you reach the offseason next year, you can cut him and save that $20 million going into 26-27 because he'll be on the last year of his deal. You can make the decision to cut him, outright release him, waive him, whatever, and no harm, no foul for the Kansas City Chiefs. But right now, I think they're kind of stuck with the hand that they dealt themselves. Somebody said, agreed. Say somebody starter in the NFC had a major injury. Yeah, I mean, maybe, right? I mean, like, if Lane Johnson goes down for the Philadelphia Eagles and the Eagles think that they've got a really legitimate chance to repeat, which they probably could, right? They probably can. I mean, they're still a top three most talented team in the NFL on paper, especially with how their defense played the back half of the year. Maybe. But Howie Roseman is an incredible general manager, and the Chiefs are going to have to eat a big chunk of the deal, I think, to get rid of him. It might be like a half and half thing. The Chiefs are like, hey, we'll pay 10, you pay 10, take him from us, please. Because we don't want to, you know, but I don't see how that helps the Chiefs in that situation. You know, the Lions, if Penei Sewell were to go down, but you don't see mid-season trades for guys like that getting paid that much a lot of the time, especially on the offensive line. Somebody said, oh no, if Sky Moore is hurt, how is he going to get his cardio in during the season? Dudes, he said, the text says busy, but I'm going to assume that's bust that they're trying to say. Again, we just talked about this. I don't think Sky Moore is going to be on the roster this year.
He's going to go get his cardio in somewhere else.
I don't think Sky Moore is a practice squad guy at this point. Another person's asking about, says, nerdy question here, but who's our punter going to be? I believe it's still going to be Matt Araiza.
Mr. Araiza.
Yeah, as far as I know.
The punt god.
They gave him an extension at the end of the year, so I believe it's still going to be him. Hopefully he's worked this offseason with a little bit of...
less touchbacks?
Yeah, a little bit of finesse, a little bit of...
doesn't have to kick it as hard as he can every single time.
Right, let's bust out the lob wedge a little bit more often.
Let's do the cold quit.
Mr. Araiza, yep. Because... He punts the ball further than Tommy Townsend did in Kansas City and possibly further than anybody in the NFL. The problem is Tommy Townsend was so good at putting the ball inside the 20, right? Putting the ball inside, coffin corners, putting a ball on a dime that has that backspin on. Araiza doesn't quite have the ability to control his punt in the same way that some of those guys do. Now, if you're at the 5-yard line punting, that's great to have that massive leg for Matt Araiza to try to flip the field. But if you're punting from your own 40-yard line, you need a little bit of precision. And hopefully Matt Araiza has been working on that this offseason.
He punts the same way Anthony Richardson plays quarterback. Just all the power in the world, you never know where it's going.
Yeah, fair point. Fair point. Somebody says that Jalen Moore versus Juwan Taylor is one of them good problems, and Simmons locking down left tackle is amazing. The real question for me is, how confident are we in Kingsley Suamataia being the first choice at left guard for the time being? It would be a huge reclaim of value in an early draft pick if he can be anywhere from serviceable to, dare I say, good in that position. I have faith in Kingsley Suamataia at left guard. I do. He's much more of a mauler, I think, which wasn't a fit for a left tackle. I mean, he played a lot of right tackle during his time at BYU. And I think transitioning from right tackle to left tackle is difficult. I think going from a left tackle in the NFL to a left guard is probably a smoother transition, especially for a guy that has experience playing the right tackle position, which is generally much more of a run blocking part of the offensive line versus where left tackle is. So I think, you know, he can be a lot more serviceable. Strength has never been an issue for Kingsley Suamataia, right? I mean, he, I believe, had the most bench press reps of any tackle in the draft last year in 2024. He got beat by primarily speed rushers, guys that had long reach, guys with long arms and wingspans, and then they got by him. And I think there's going to be less of a problem with that at left guard. And he can focus a little bit more on what I believe the best part of his game is, which is run blocking. If Kingsley Suamataia can be a good left guard, I'm not even saying great. If he can be a middle of the road, if he can be the 14th best left guard in the NFL, when you've got the best center in football in Creed Humphrey sitting next to him, bookended with a top five guard in the NFL in Trey Smith, and top five might not be doing him a good enough service. If Josh Simmons can be who Josh Simmons is being talked about as right now at left tackle, the Chiefs go from being a team that is an average offensive line to a top five offensive line unit in this league. Along with the fact that you've got the best player on the planet at quarterback, hopefully you have a receiving core that sees a little bit of a resurgence this year, as long as they can stay healthy, because you've got Xavier Worthy and Hollywood Brown dealing with injuries right now. Rashee Rice is going to miss some of this season, I would anticipate. Probably around 6 weeks would be my guess with the suspension. But I think this Chiefs offense, if Kingsley Suamataia is serviceable at left guard, Josh Simmons rises to the fore as that top five pick that people were talking about him as before he got hurt in that Oregon game. We could see a return to those great Chiefs offenses of the early part of Patrick Mahomes' tenure, which should terrify the rest of the National Football League.
Well, let's say Kingsley's not even a great left guard. I would much rather have good left tackle play and struggle at left guard than be great at left guard and struggle at left tackle. it's much more manageable as an offense to get around a guard that struggles than a tackle, especially your blindside tackle that struggles. So,
which is why the Chiefs made the move to move Tooney out to left tackle last year and put Caliendo in at left guard.
And that, it worked to a degree. I mean, once you got against Philly, there was no answers. You couldn't handle that defensive line. But it got them to the Super Bowl. I'm not sure they get to the Super Bowl if Wanya Morris or DJ Humphreys or Kingsley were playing left tackle in the postseason.
No question. 913-586-7965 is our number. I want to talk about Gilbert Arenas. I'm doing it when we come back. This insane story. He got arrested for apparently illegal poker game operations. It's kind of a wild story. We'll talk about it next here on After Hours. 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber, Jackson Ogden, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
All right. We've talked a lot of Chiefs, we've talked a lot of Royals, and I've kind of been pushing this story off, but it is a weird one. Earlier today, Doug Greenberg of ESPN broke the story. Former NBA All-Star Gilbert Arenas was arrested earlier today in connection with a federal indictment that alleges Arenas of hosting illegal high-stakes poker games at his house in Encino, California. This came from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Central California. He's being charged with one count of conspiracy to operate an illegal gambling business, one count of operating an illegal gambling business. It's the same thing. So conspiracy to operate as well as operating, two separate charges, and one count of making false statements to federal investigators. So lying to police. He appeared in court Wednesday afternoon, had his bail set at $50,000, and was released on that bond after pleading not guilty. According to the indictment, Arenas, who owned the house in Encino, California, was renting it out to other people. He was renting out his house as well as one of his associates, who then staged the mansion for these high-stakes poker games. He recruited co-conspirators to host the events and then collected rents from the co-conspirators on Arenas' behalf. They ran, apparently, the biggest caveat to this is that they were running Pot Limit Omaha poker games. I have absolutely no idea what Pot Limit Omaha games are, but apparently, according to ESPN, they ran the games and they collected a cut from each game. So whatever the pot was that was contested, Arenas and his co-conspirators, they would pocket some of that money, and that's how they profited from these major games. They said that the group hired chefs, valets, armed security guards to staff the games. They hired young women who would serve drinks, provided massages, and offered companionship to the poker players in exchange for tips. And oh my God, it's getting worse. And that the co-conspirators took a cut of the server's tips from the games. Yikes. Oh, good God.
There's a lot to unfold here.
Yeah, okay. So I gotta find something out here. I'm just so curious. What were the career earnings of Gilbert Arenas? Played in the league for a long time, right? He was the his first pick of the second round in 2001, played in the league until 2013. He made $163 million in his career. The guy is, there's no way he's strapped for cash, and yet he's renting out his house in Encino, California for illegal poker games. Now, my question, and somebody's bringing this up, he's just doing what they do in Vegas. Yeah, there's something to be said for that. Like, I'm confused about why this is such a major deal, I guess. I mean, there's gambling is becoming legalized everywhere. The sports gambling especially, right? I saw somebody on Twitter that was like, Gilbert Arenas can't have a poker game at his house, but I can bet on a Division III football game from my phone. there's a...
I mean, pretty soon you're going to be able to bet on high school football. It's never going to end.
There's some hypocrisy at work here.
I am very curious what constitutes an illegal poker game, because there's tons of people around the country who play poker with their buddies, right? Like, we've all done it. We've all gotten together with our 100%. Friends and played a game of poker. What makes it, quote-unquote, illegal compared to just having fun? That, got to wait for more details on this one, because I don't really know.
Yeah. So the top Google search is it illegal to play poker for money at a home in California? They said, yes, you can. There are no laws that prohibit the hosting of home games. Bear in mind that if you profit from the game, if you make a profit, then it is deemed an illegal game. There are no limits on betting, so you can set the stakes at whatever you and your friends feel comfortable with. But as soon as you make a profit off of it, so if you lose money playing poker, you've done nothing wrong. But if you make money playing poker, then apparently that's illegal. Now, there are some parts to this story that are like, yikes, you know, hiring young women to be waitresses and giving massages and quote unquote offering companionship.
Yeah, when you said that,
I'm not going to read into
the
that.
The companionship part of it kind of got into an uncomfortable situation. That's where it went like,
there's something strange happening. You know, like floating, you know, renting out your house for these high-stake poker games.
Airbnb-ing the house for poker.
And apparently, you know, some of the people involved in these poker games, one of the people included in the indictment is Yevgeny Giora Gershman, who is an alleged high-level member of an Israeli organized crime group. So there may have... Yeah, it's... I don't know.
This was not your typical boys' night poker.
No.
That's what I'm gathering from this.
There's, I see both sides of it. Because I think, like, hey, if I want to have a poker game at my house, I should be able to have a poker game at my house. Now, this wasn't your garden variety poker game. There was the million-dollar pots probably being thrown around here a little bit. Woof, dude. You can make money, you can't take a rake. So it's because they were taking a cut of the profits from the poker game, I guess. Taking a cut as the host now becomes a business and he isn't licensed. It all comes back to collecting tax.
Oh. That makes sense.
Okay. I'm starting to learn more about...
We're piecing it together.
Yeah, I'm starting to learn more
Did not go to school for law.
No. And I didn't learn about the laws of gambling either. So I'm learning some of the little idiosyncrasies of gambling law.
See, I'm so used to losing that I never even have to worry about paying taxes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I always just lose. So
I'm sorry.
I don't have anything to pay.
I really don't gamble all that much. Like, I've been to a casino a few times,
right,
and like, you know, $20, $30, $50.
Put it on roulette or something.
I usually just play slot machines.
Yeah.
You know, I'm playing quarter slots, 50-cent slots, and I walk away with absolutely no money.
I normally go on my birthday every year. That's basically it. I'll go with a $100 bill to the blackjack table, and I'm out of there in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, valid. One of my favorite stories is my mother and father-in-law, when my then-girlfriend, now wife, turned 18, we went down to Oklahoma to a casino down there, and my father-in-law gave me and my wife each $50 and was like, go figure it out. I walked out of that casino with like $27 of the 50 that I originally had. So I lost $20. My wife walked out with $191. I was furious. I've never made money going to casino. My wife has always made money going to a casino.
My buddy's girlfriend, very similar thing. First time she hit the slot machine, bang. Just bang. I don't remember how much it was,
sick,
but very first time. Never gone before. Came out for an event. I think it was someone's birthday. Bang. First time. Yeah. I was like, really?
Occasionally she'll ask me, she's like, do you want to go to a casino? Like, do you want to go to Argosy or do you want to go down to Harrah's or whatever? And I'm like, I'll go with you. I'm not gambling a dime. You can. You go make us money. All I'll do is lose it. So you do your thing. Yeah, I guess I was unaware of the guidelines and bylaws of gambling in the United States. Gambling laws are all about the rich staying rich. Well, wouldn't shock
me. Pretty much. I mean, you know the hilarious thing, Logan, is now that Emmanuel Clase got put on the restricted list for gambling with Luis Ortiz, the very next day, the Guardians put out their lineup card on Twitter, and it was presented by Bet365. Mm-hmm. I mean, the jokes write themselves.
The hypocrisy is rampant right now. And I'm of the opinion of, you know, legalized gambling, legalized sports betting. I am. These are the side effects. These things are going to happen. You know, people will not be able to get out of their own way in a certain respect. And while I agree that some of this situation seems a little bit unnecessary for it to follow Gilbert Arenas around because he was just renting out his home. Now, he probably knew what was going on inside the home while he was renting it. But also, Agent Zero, you made $160 million in your NBA career. Why did you find it necessary to do this? Avoid the situation. But, you know, Gilbert has gotten himself in trouble plenty of times before. I don't know if anybody's seen that untold yet, the Javaris Crittenden thing. Gilbert's not the best human, I think, in a lot of respects. Gilbert puts himself in some bad situations for absolutely no reason whatsoever, and this is another example. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber alongside our producer for tonight's program, Jackson Ogden, with you till 9 o'clock. Stick around, much more coming up here on your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
They say you learn something new every day. But I can honestly say I did not expect the thing I learned today to be about the inner workings of the legality regarding gambling. People keep mentioning something called a rake in the text line. Never heard of that in my life, but apparently a rake is a cut of the pot. Didn't know that. Never heard that term before. You learn things every day. Like I said, I'm not an avid gambler. Like, I've been a few times and I just use slot machines and lose my money and leave. Another headline that leaves me scratching my head. So apparently Tom Brady has like a newsletter that he releases in which he talks about Scottie Scheffler. Scottie, best golfer in the world. I believe he's the best golfer in the world since the peak of Tiger's powers. Who, you know, said at the Open Championship, which he won earlier this month, you know, talked about being a father and a husband was more fulfilling than being the world's best golfer. He said, you know, it's not a fulfilling life. It's fulfilling from the sense of accomplishment, but it's not fulfilling from a sense of the deepest places of your heart. My family is my priority. I'm blessed to be able to come out here and play golf, but if my golf ever started affecting my home life or if it ever affected the relationship I have with my wife or my son, that's going to be the last day that I play out here for a living. Brady, in his newsletter, goes on to question that. Scotty said he'd rather be a better father and husband than a good golfer, and my question is, why are those mutually exclusive? Sure, they're different blocks on the pyramid, but they're part of the same pyramid. They're connected. I don't think Tom Brady is the right guy to be talking with Scottie Scheffler about the work home, like that balance. Tom Brady, you are not the poster child for that one, my guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, Brady's relationship kind of went downhill when he decided to come back for his age 45 season.
You retired and then unretired, and your wife divorced you for her trainer. You are not the spokesperson for this. You are not the poster child for telling another athlete how they should go about balancing their career and their family. I think Scotty is doing a pretty damn good job of that right now. Okay. He's prioritizing his family over being a golfer, and he's still the best in the planet at what he does. He just won the U.S. Open by 5 shots. I don't think he needs your advice right now, Tom. How about you worry about your minority ownership in the Raiders and your stuff with Fox Sports and trying to figure out the joint custody situation with your kids? Maybe we don't talk about Scotty. Just let that guy do his thing because it's working out pretty well so far. And he was actually quite funny in Happy Gilmore too. And I kind of want to talk about Happy Gilmore too. I watched it on the flight back from my wife and I's trip. We went to Jamaica last week. So we'll run through a lot of that. I want to talk about the trip to Jamaica. I want to talk about some movies, some TV shows, things that I've watched recently. Because I've heard a lot of from both sides. I've heard some people really liked Happy Gilmore 2. I've heard some people really didn't like Happy Gilmore 2. I'm interested to see what people think of that. And I'm interested to hear about College Football 26 because I bought the game. I did a few of like the little practice things, just like I want to figure out the mechanics before I like dive into it again. I wanted to see if the game was any different than it was last year. And that's another one. I've heard some people really, really like it. I've heard some people really, really don't. So I want to get some opinions.
We can definitely talk about that because I got the game too. And okay. I've got some hot takes about that.
You've got some opinions. Well, I can't wait to hear them. 913-586-7965 is our number. Final hour of After Hours here on this Wednesday. Coming your way next, Logan Weber alongside Jackson Ogden, 96.5, The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5, The Fan.